talking about individual trainings versus group trainings, a preliminary evaluation of peer recruitment through respondent-driven sampling of hidden populations of injection of drug users in New York City. And just to give a brief overview, I'm first going to talk about some sampling strategies that have been used to recruit illicit drug users, most specifically about respondent-driven sampling, or RDS, a description of our study, and then methodological implications from our findings. Generating a representative population sample of hard-to-reach populations has put some challenges in substance abuse research. And generally, we use approaches like convenience, targeted, snowball, and time-based sampling to recruit members from this population. However, our ability to draw valid conclusions is limited by non-random selection of participants and bias due to volunteers and masking. Respondent-driven sampling is a chain referral sampling strategy that mathematically weights estimates to offset non-random recruitment. An RDS begins by selecting an initial small population of what we call seeds. And we enroll seeds and ask each of them to refer a pre-specified number of people, usually three members of their social network, to also participate in this study. And they contribute to the referral wave one. We do the same for each person that comes into wave one. We ask them to recruit three peers to also participate in the study, and they make up wave two. And this process of recruits becoming recruiters continues until the desired sample size is reached. Based on the principle of 6 degrees of separation, we should technically be able to reach any member of this population within 6 waves. The success of RDS in generating an unbiased sample of drug users is dependent upon several design features. First, we rely on peers to recruit peers. And this assumes that people are going to be better at recruiting from within their social network than we as researchers or outreach workers would be, especially in a population that's hidden. This reduces volunteers and unmasking, and it also protects the confidentiality of participants because we're not going out to find them. We're relying on people in a hidden population to come to us because they were referred by friends, so they're revealing their identity only when they want to. We also use a dual incentive mechanism, so participants are given incentives for both participating in the study and for referring participants to us, and this reduces volunteers and masking. We also give participants a limited number of coupons to refer networks. This eliminates competition between participants and prevents the creation of semi-professional recruiters or from people using this as kind of a side hustle. And it also prevents somebody with maybe 50 networks from being overrepresented in the population compared to other people who may only have 2 or 3 people. As the waves expand over time, homophily, or the tendency to recruit people like yourself, often with age, gender, race, income, reduces over time, and as chains lengthen, the sample composition reaches equilibrium. So this means that after a certain number of waves, the distribution of the characteristics in the population, if we continue to add people, this distribution will cease to change after a certain time. And the sample size that we get in the end should be independent of the people, the characteristics in the sample size at the end should be independent of the people that we select in the beginning. So our seeds could technically be anyone. And as long as people are successful and able to recruit people and these chains are long, then we should get a representative population that we can draw probability-based inferences from. Now, how do we make sure that people are successful at recruiting? A lot of people have come up with ways to make sure that RDS works properly. So some people select seeds from syringe exchange programs and community-based organizations. People at these programs generally are used to recruiting peers. Other colleagues, Hackathon and colleagues, have used steering incentives, which are, you add, if you want to, let's say for drug users, if you want to recruit young drug users, which are often harder to reach, you may offer more money if people are able to bring in young drug users. Ramirez and Valles have showed that brief individual recruitment trainings that explain the recruitment process, specifically who and how to recruit, increase the distribution of coupons and therefore people bringing in networks. In our study, we used a group facilitated respondent-driven sampling session to improve our peer recruitment. And our training sessions provide an opportunity for study participants to learn about the study, their role in the study, and to discuss and practice methods for recruiting peers. This is the first study to use group sessions to enhance peer recruitment in an RDS sample. Our study objective was to determine if individuals who attended our trainings differed significantly from those that did not with respect to recruiting and eligible peers and follow-up rates. Our analysis was taken from an ongoing longitudinal study called START, which stands for Social Ties Associated with Risk for Transition into Drug Use, into Injection Drug Use. So we enrolled active and drug users that we recruited using a combination of sampling strategies, including targeted sampling, convenience-based street outreach, and RDS. We had two components, a prospective study that followed non-injectors over a period of 18 months to see what factors were associated with transition to injection drug use, and then a cross-sectional study of recent injectors. So to kind of put the study into context and show the sample that we're providing the trainings for, we had, again, the prospective study and the cross-sectional study, and within each study we had an RDS component and a non-RDS component. So the people that were enrolled in our RDS component were seeds that we recruited through targeted sampling, the people that our seeds brought in, which I'll call seed networks, and the participants that were recruited through our seed networks, or networks. We also had people who came in through the study through convenience-based street outreach, who maybe heard about the study through other means, but they weren't referred to us by a participant in the study, so we enrolled them in kind of a convenience sample to have two samples to compare at the end. But in this analysis, we're just going to focus on the yellow, which are the people that were enrolled in the respondent-driven sampling and were given this training. Our data was collected from July 2006 to September 2007, and our seeds were recruited using street intercept sampling from 36 socioeconomically, ethnographically defined neighborhoods in Queens, Bronx, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. People were eligible if they were between 18 and 40 years of age, and they had to be active injectors or non-injectors. Active injectors had to have reported injecting heroin, crack, or cocaine for less than or equal to 3 years, and had to have injected at least once in the past 6 months. Active non-injectors had to report using non-injection heroin, crack, or cocaine for more than or equal to a year, and had to use 2 to 3 times a week in the past 3 months. We verified reported drug use with a rapid urine drug test screening, which tested for the presence of opiates and cocaine in the urine for 2 to 3 days prior to the baseline interview or the drug test. Seeds that were enrolled had the additional enrollment criteria that they had to agree, they had to feel that they were able to bring in 3 friends or associates to also participate. So we asked the seeds to bring in their networks, and when their networks came in, they had to meet the same criteria as far as age and drug use, but we didn't require that they had to bring in 3. I mean, we asked them to bring in 3, but we didn't make it an eligibility criteria that they felt like they would be able to refer people. As long as they were referred into somebody in the study as part of the RDS sample, they were included. And this is just an example of the coupon we used. It has limited eligibility criteria and a unique 9-digit identification number on the front. So all of our participants that were enrolled in this RDS component, they initially took a survey, and after the survey, we gave them an individual recruitment training where we emphasized some tips to help them with recruitment strategies, and then participants were invited to attend one of our bi-weekly RDS training sessions. And outreach workers confirmed at least twice with the participants to confirm that they would be able to make appointments that we scheduled for them to attend training. The trainings had about 7 to 9 people, and we provided food, and participants were compensated for coming. After the survey, we administered a brief questionnaire to gather information about experiences people had had with recruitment to find out whether participants were using some of the strategies that we were presenting at the trainings, and to get some feedback on the group sessions. And this feedback was really important because we used the feedback to modify the structure of the trainings, to kind of tailor both our needs and to also have participants get out of the trainings what they feel like they wanted. So some of the things that participants wanted to know kind of what our organization was doing as a whole, and specifically this study, and kind of how their participation in our study would contribute to our long-term goals and how their participating would affect the community. So we tried to emphasize why we were using RDS, why they were extremely important, and why their recruitment had implications for our study and how well we could affect the community with what we were able to obtain. We also wanted to create a comfortable forum for discussing recruitment strategies and difficulties, and also for people to ask questions. Our trainings, we required that people came to at least one, but no more than two trainings. So in each session, we had a mix of people, some who had been really successful, maybe that had already brought in three people that were eligible. Some people who maybe they didn't know where to start, they weren't really sure how to approach people, so they hadn't tried. And then other people who had tried, maybe they had brought people in that were not eligible, or people hadn't come in and they were getting frustrated and they had started to stop recruiting people. So we have a mix of these people and we're relying on them to share their experiences, and we're facilitating them sharing their experiences to make sure that when everybody leaves the session, they feel like they have a better idea of how to recruit peers when they leave. And to kind of ensure that participants felt comfortable and able to recruit members, we use role play. So we would have a person that had been successful demonstrate what they did. And you would see light bulbs kind of go off at this phase, like, oh, why didn't I try that? You know, that's a really good idea. I'm going to use that next time I go out. And then also, we have peer feedback on what they did well and what maybe they left out, what they could have done better. And even people that had been having difficulties, they would do a role play, and we would kind of work through as a group what they could have done better or something that they were comfortable with, because not everybody can use the same strategy. And one of the main things that kind of is incorporated in all of these is creating enthusiasm for the study. So when people left the training session, we had people that would tell us, you know, this was really beneficial. Just coming here has been helpful. And tomorrow your storefront's going to be packed because I know five people off the bat I'm going to recruit for you. Or they would tell us they're going right out afterwards and they're going to bring people in for us tomorrow. So even if they didn't bring in the 5 or 10 people that they promised us, at least they're showing enthusiasm. They feel like they know how to do it now. Maybe they didn't before. And just when you're enthusiastic about a study and you're going to talk to people positively about it, you're going to have a better chance of getting people to come in. It's kind of like a salesman. So we looked at whether or not people attended at least one training, and we looked at attendance by some covariates, and then our outcome was study retention or recruiting at least one eligible network. So when we looked at race, ethnicity, gender, and income by attendance, so blue is people that did not attend, red, purple is those that attended. Attendance varied by race and ethnicity, but not significantly by gender, education, or income. When we compared those that attended that did not on homelessness, recent injection drug use, and age, we found that there were significant differences only in age. So people that attended the trainings were slightly older than those that did not. When we compared by enrollment and interview site, we chose to look at enrollment site because we had interviews at the storefront and at our mobile location. So we thought when we only had training sessions held at our storefront, we found that people that were interviewed at our storefront were more likely to come to the trainings, which are also held at our storefront, than people who were interviewed off-site. And we also looked at recruitment site, and we found significant differences. And this is probably because our storefront site or our stationary site was located in Harlem, and people that live or are recruited in Bronx and Harlem are the closest to the site, so when they live close by, they're more likely to come to the trainings. This is some of the same variables that I presented before, comparing attendance and not attending training, but the two that I want to point out are recruitment of eligible networks. So people that are attended our training, 90.6% were likely to bring in at least one eligible compared to 9.4% of those that did not attend training. And looking at follow-up, those that completed the six-month follow-up, 65.5% of those that attended the training and only 3.6% that did not attend the training came for the follow-up visit. And both of these were very significant factors. So in conclusion, we found people who attended the training sessions were more likely to recruit at least one eligible network and to return for follow-up visits. We also found that RDSC attendees tended to be older, and since we're targeting a younger population, we may need to motivate younger participants to come to these training sessions since they seem to be beneficial. People were also more likely to attend when they lived or were recruited in an area close to the site where we were administering training, And overall, we only had 67% attendance at trainings. And since they seem to be very beneficial for our outcome, we want to get this number closer to 100%. So we're working right now on outreach efforts to try to bring people in who haven't attended at least one training. As far as implications for future studies, RDST has the potential to enhance RDS when we have strict enrollment criteria, when seeds are recruited from sources that may not be used to recruiting people, and when a cohort design is used. A lot of studies in the past have not used respondent-driven sampling for follow-up studies, so this is interesting to know. I guess one of the take-home messages that we had is one of the factors we thought was influencing our results was that people who came to the trainings were developing rapport with the staff. So we would have people stopping in just on a regular basis to check in and see if people that they recruited had come in. People, we had feedback that they enjoyed the sessions, they liked the facilitators. So building this rapport is kind of key. Same thing as before, when you have a positive relationship with the study that you're involved in, you're going to be better recruiters for the study. When you have a positive view of the study that you're participating in, you think that it's beneficial, you're more likely to come back for an interview, especially when you feel comfortable there, and you're going to be better able to recruit people. And I just want to thank some of the other colleagues of mine at the New York Academy of Medicine and NIDA for supporting the grant. So, if you have any questions. It's a 5-year study, and right now we're only in the first year. So right now it's just preliminary analysis. So do you mean the sponsors for the follow-up?
Yeah.
So for people that attended RDST, it was 90.6%, and so we had more, 67%. I think the overall follow-up rate is somewhere in the 70s or 80s, but that's why we're trying to pick up the RDS to try to improve it. That was actually, we didn't expect to find that result, that it would improve follow-up. It was kind of an unintended beneficial consequence. So, yes? From the baseline studies that they took with us. But we also, for all of our participants in the respondent-driven sampling part of the study, for the IDUs that are only in the cross-sectional study, we have them come back after 3 months to do a survey not related to the study but about RDS. So we asked them, were the people that you recruited, were they friends of yours? How well did you know them? Like, how often did you see them, to kind of get who they're recruiting at? What types of strategies did you use? Did you use the strategies that we provided in the session? Was the session helpful for you? And then we asked these same questions of people in the 6-month follow-up for the cohort study. We also asked them after the training session. So if they've attended 2 trainings, then they can tell us in the interval between the first training and the second training whether some of the things helped. So we have some factors, like, was the person you recruited a friend, acquaintance? Did you use drugs with them? How often did you use drugs with them? So some variables like that, I think, is that what you... So we when we write up the paper, hopefully, I mean, we will have access to that data, but right now I couldn't...
Uh-huh.
Right, which is why we put it in the follow-up too. So this way we'll be able to compare people that came to our trainings to those that didn't, at least actually for both. So as long as we can get them back a second time, we'll get that information.